Hello and welcome back to the WealthFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle. The health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WealthFest and their presenting partner, KBC. I'm so excited to be back for a second series. We'll be speaking to another incredible lineup of industry experts, hearing their inspiring stories and motivating us to move well, eat well and live well. This podcast, supported by KBC, is just one of many health and wellness resources available on wellfest.ie to help you on your wellness journey. With thanks to KBC, we'll be tapping into a wealth of knowledge with our guests to empower even more people of all ages to prioritise their health, fitness and well-being. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. So Dr. Sinead Kane, double PhD doctorate, double Guinness World Record holder, qualified lawyer, researcher and a visually impaired athlete. Sinead doesn't let her disability hold her back and is living life to the full. Sinead, welcome to the WealthFest podcast brought to you by KBC.
Thanks very much for having me on the podcast, Marty. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to have you, Sinead. It really is. For those of our listeners who are listening right now who haven't heard of you before, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm from Youghal County, Cork, which is a seaside town in East Cork. So I'm lucky to have the beach on my doorstep. I love dogs. Growing up, I had a poodle. The type of music I'm into, my favourite band is ABBA. I love Elvis. I also like country music. And I'm vegetarian. And I happen to be a runner who has a disability.
I'm a big fan of y'all, I have to say. I've passed it many times going from doing work in Dungarvan to then have to go to Cork. So I passed y'all. Pass y'all quite a lot. I love the town. And like you said, you know, being by the water, it makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we're hoping now to get the Greenway in Youghal soon from Youghal to Middleton. So that'll be a big boost for the town. And also there 2 years ago in 2019, we had the Ironman in Youghal.
Yes, I remember that. What was that like? I didn't get to go to it. What was it like?
Well, actually, I was at a 12-hour race that particular day up in Belfast. So I actually wasn't in Youghal.
You were probably gutted you missed it, so were
yeah,
you?
I was, yeah. But I heard that on that particular day, it was absolutely lashing raining.
Oh,
as
no,
normal.
As normal,
in Ireland. And I think they had to cancel the swim part as well because of the temperature in the water. So then they only did the running and the cycling.
I remember that as well. And I'd say some of the athletes coming over here are wondering, what is this? You know.
And then they were hoping to basically put on a better show then and have weather with them, a great day, etc. last June or last August, but then COVID hit and everything, so didn't go ahead.
It didn't go ahead, no. I have to say, you don't have a very strong y'all accent now. You managed to avoid that, you did.
you see, there's a bit like... on one side of Youghal Bridge, you're in County Waterford, and on the other side of Youghal Bridge, you're in County Cork. So,
and are people very passionate about that little line?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Anybody who's living near the bridge makes it very well known that they're up the Desi and up Waterford, but I'm very much up Cork.
Oh, so. You're up Cork. Okay, it's good to have cleared that up. So before we get into it. Sinead, you have such an impressive list of qualifications and achievements, you know, and to achieve so much, you know, you must like ooze motivation.
Some days I do and some days I don't. Some days I just think to myself, oh, what is the point now in getting up out of bed, and oh, today's going to be a rotten day. And I do have those days, but I think it just comes down to your attitude towards your day is how your day will unfold. And I think that it's okay to have bad days. Like, you can't be 100% positive every single day of the year. But for me, the importance is not staying stuck in that negativity, because I think resilient people, they more focus on that pain is temporary or a situation is temporary, whereas somebody might say, I never do good at anything, and they'll use the word never to infer permanence, whereas a resilient person might say, I didn't do good on this project. Mm-hmm. And they more kind of phrase it, self-talk, in a way of more temporary type language. So I have bad days as well, like frustrating days. I love green tea. And one morning I went down and I actually thought that there was no green tea there, and I started panicking. So I suppose this will just show you that on some days I might not be as logical thinking. So I think when you get into that state of negativity or panic, or it's just about calming your mind and being focused. And it really does come back to choices. Like, I couldn't choose how I was born, but I can choose how I live my life. And I choose to live it in a productive, meaningful way. And we all have that choice.
Mm-hmm. I feel you now in the likes of the little situations like the green tea, because just last night I came home from work, Sinead, and I have this like nightly routine where I have a bowl of porridge before bed, but I had no almond, I had no almond milk left.
Yeah.
And I treated it as if it was the worst thing that has ever happened to me, you know, until I sat down and I was like, hang on a minute, we can do without the almond milk for one night. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of like, I know people might think, OK, this is like not a serious situation, but like that can be discomfort. Like if you have a favorite food or a favorite tea and it's not there, then that is discomfort. Some people say to me, like, how do you develop resilience? And I suppose some days it's about maybe being disciplined. And if you're trying to achieve a goal, and even though if you like a certain food or tea, that maybe restricting yourself and see, can you go through that discomfort for a small while? Because then that in turn helps you to be disciplined. And I know that might seem very basic and simple, but it's like small building blocks like that that helps you to have a greater foundation to take on the things that actually are the real serious major things.
Absolutely, yeah. Now let's talk about the Guinness World Record titles that you have, because you have two, and like, you know, I can only ever dream of maybe even seeing somebody complete one, let alone attempting one myself. So the furthest distance for a female on a treadmill in 12 hours and being the first blind person to complete a marathon on each of the seven continents, which you completed in less than 7 days. Like, even reading that out, to me, I'm like, wow. So I can't imagine what it's like to have done that. You know, tell us a bit about the challenges. And surely mindset must have been huge for you to achieve these.
Well, with regards to the treadmill record attempt for the furthest distance for any female on a treadmill, when it was suggested to me, would I like to take on that challenge? I had the self-confidence and I said to myself, yes, I do think I can take on that, because all of the signs in my training were there that I could achieve this. So, in my training, I would go to the treadmill in the gym and easily I could run on a treadmill for 4 hours myself and happily listen to music. And so, like, running on a treadmill for 4 hours with another person is tough, but when you're actually doing it by yourself, it is a bit tougher. But for me, I enjoyed access to the treadmill because it gave me the freedom to do my own thing, because I can't go outside and run for 4 hours by myself without a guide runner. So that's where I could either say to myself, okay, like, I'm wasting 4 hours of my life today going off here to run on the treadmill, or I can say to myself, oh, what freedom I have by having this opportunity to train on the treadmill. And actually, I am quite blessed to be able to actually be able to run, because some people, maybe through accident or illness, don't have the opportunity to run. So I suppose you have to tell yourself about being grateful. And while I was on the treadmill, I would listen to music. It would help me with the whole thing of not thinking about, oh, am I afraid of falling. Also, like, all the signs were there that I could achieve the treadmill record, but coming up to doing it on the treadmill record was to go ahead on the Monday. And I rang my run coach, guide runner John, on the Thursday, and I had told him that I had looked up the girl who had the treadmill record, and I looked at all of her achievements, and I just became very intimidated, and I started comparing myself to her, and I started self-doubting myself. That's where sometimes you need somebody else's belief in you for you to believe in yourself. And he just reminded me to, rather than focusing on what she could do, to focus on my strengths. So like my strength being that I have went on a treadmill for 4 hours running by myself. So that's what I focused on with that. And then I obviously achieved the Guinness World Record for furthest distance for a female. Amazing. So in the 12 hours, I did 130.5 kilometres.
Oh, my God.
And for that 12 hours, I was only stopped for, was it 1 minute, 26 seconds in total. And even like before the treadmill record attempt, I had practiced going into the loo, how long it would take me to go from the loo to get back on the treadmill. And the way the treadmill works is like, the Guinness World Records, they're so strict about administration. So a lot of paperwork has to be filled, and you cannot have your feet off the belt until the belt stops. So it's not a situation of like bringing it down. You just cannot get off the belt until the belt stops. So every 4 hours as well, the treadmill would automatically stop. It would only run for 4 hours. So the way I said in my head was that I was going to complete a marathon in every 4 hours. And I know now that might sound a bit crazy, that because in my head I was saying to myself, all I have to do is 3 marathons. Because for me,
it does sound very crazy, because I know when I'm on a treadmill, I do something similar on a very smaller scale, where I'm like, okay, 30 minutes on the treadmill to me is just under, like, you know, 4 by 8 minutes. Whereas you're telling me here now, it's like just a couple of marathons, you know? But I suppose you do kind of have to break it down in segments, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I did. Yeah. So for me, I was just breaking it down. And so for me, it was too overwhelming to say to myself, okay, I'm standing on this treadmill now for 12 hours. So I said to myself, okay, from now until 4 hours, that's all I'm going to think about. And at the end of the first 4 hours, I went to the bathroom, and I don't know, I was about 50 seconds or something like that in total by the time it allowed me get off and back on and all of that. And then at the second 4 hour mark, which was 8 hours, the guys asked me, did I want to go to the bathroom? And I said no. And I kept running on the spot while the treadmill was trying to stop itself and then restart. And they were saying, Sinead, you're not getting any extra distance for this. The treadmill is kind of logged off now. We're waiting for it to start up again. They were saying, like, you may as well just stand and take a break. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to do that, because I knew that if I stood and got comfortable, then I wouldn't want to restart again. So for that, they said to me to come off the treadmill for about 20 seconds. They were going to try and get it to get back on faster. So that's what I'm saying about only being off it for stop for about a minute and 26 seconds or so. And in the last hour of the treadmill record, I attempt from hour 11 to 12, I could not tell you who was around me. I was so, so focused, because all I kept repeating in my head was, do not mess this up in the last hour. Do not mess this up. Because like, I would have been so annoyed with myself if everything was going to plan, and that if I had made a silly move at 11 hours, 30 minutes, and then the last 11 hours of my life have been completely wasted and all the team around me. So that's where you, like, they had told me, I think around 10 to 12 or so, or 5 to 12, that I had actually completed the record, but I actually didn't hear any of them saying that.
You just kept going.
Yeah. So I didn't actually stop until the 12 hours had stopped, and everybody was clapping. And I remember saying to my run coach, John, John O'Regan. I said to him, have I achieved it? And he said, yeah, that was achieved 10 minutes ago. So, and as well as that, when you stand on the treadmill and in the lead up to the treadmill record attempt, you use all this visualization. You think about what's the first thing you're going to say to people when you finish, mm-hmm. Who's the first person you're going to hug? What's the first thing you're going to drink after the attempt, and the first thing you're going to eat? So you have all that built up in your head in the lead up to it, and you kind of think about it for the first half an hour into the treadmill attempt. By 2 hours in, you do not care what you're going to say, who you're going to hug. You do not care about any of that. So really then the visualization for me changed to just picturing my name on a record. Yeah. Other than that, I didn't care. And I did the treadmill attempt in the Clayton Hotel, Burlington Road. They mm-hmm. were very accommodating, and I was very grateful. And at the end, a lot of the staff came up into the gym and they all started clapping, and they brought up this big bottle of champagne, which I was extremely grateful for. But after spending 12 hours running and consuming loads of fluid, there was just no room left in my stomach.
Say, the last thing you wanted is a bottle of bubbly, yeah.
So, but my team very much appreciated it. So they all had that. So that's in terms of the treadmill record. In terms of the world marathon, that was 7 marathons, 7 continents within 7 days. So the first marathon was in Antarctica. The next was Chile, then Miami, then Madrid, then Marrakesh, then Dubai, and then Sydney. And for me, like, I suppose you could either dread and say to yourself, oh, I've another marathon to do. What am I going to do? Whereas, again, this comes back to mindset and self-talk. And what you focus on and your attitude, whether you focus on the negative or the positive. Mm-hmm. So rather than focusing on a negative and saying, oh, I have another marathon to do, I focused on us going to the next location.
Yeah.
So that's what had my attention focused. And then that made me grateful for the marathon, because I said to myself, it's through doing the marathon that I get to go to this location. So that's in terms of the World Marathon Challenge. I might read some statistics about the World Marathon Challenge. So in total, the race included 59 hours of flight time, 43,500 kilometers of flight distance, and 295 kilometers of running. And getting to the race starting point in Punta Arenas required 27 hours of travel and a distance of 14,359 kilometers.
That
and then returning
insane.
Home from Sydney was 19,200 kilometres. And the temperatures varied between, it was about minus 30 in Antarctica, and then it was about plus 38 in Dubai.
So that's exactly what I wanted to ask you next. You know, I'm listening to these places you're listening out, and I'm thinking of the conditions and how different they all were. Like, which one did you find was the most enjoyable, and which one did you find the most difficult?
Well, I was expecting Antarctica to be the most difficult, but actually it did end up being the most enjoyable, because I had prepared a lot for that, as in I had mentally psyched myself up to know, okay, this is going to be really cold. Now, you don't get to know how cold it is until you really actually get there.
I believe that now for sure. Yeah, like, I'm here, we were here earlier on complaining about how it was sunny last week, and then it was what, 3 degrees earlier on, and then now you're telling us about being in Antarctica doing a marathon. I feel so bad for giving out about being cold for 5 minutes this morning. Like
the thing about Antarctica was, I was most worried about because I suffer from aniridia, which means I take in too much light. A lot of people have this perception of blindness as in total darkness. A lot of my problem is I take in too much light because I don't have the pupil, or I don't have the iris of my eye, which is colour part of my eye. So I let in too much light. Mm-hmm. And out in Antarctica, it's like white sky with the sun shining against the white snow, which causes a massive glare. So from the Friday until the Monday, I was really suffering with my eyes badly. Mm-hmm. And we were saying to ourselves that if my eyes were going to be as sore and as bad, that I would just put on a complete blindfold over my eyes during the marathon.
Oh, wow.
But in the end, even though I ended up suffering with blisters 3 miles in the first marathon in Antarctica,
3 miles
it did end
in.
Up being, yeah, and that never happens to me in any race or in any training run. So by around 5 to 10K, my guide runner, John, he could see I was limping and he said, "Sinead, are you okay?" Now, I have this thing about stopping. I don't like stopping in any race.
No matter how much pain you're in.
So I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And he said, "Sinead, I can see by you, you're not fine. You're kind of hopping as you're running." And I suppose he had to help me to think logically. He had to make me realize, okay, after this marathon, you have about another 6 marathons to do. So if there is something wrong, you have to be honest with me. So then I told him that I had burning sensation on my feet. And he said, okay, we have to stop. So we have to get your feet sorted, because otherwise this is going to cause a big problem for the next races. I stopped, got my feet sorted. And yeah, so, and we kept going then again. So I did enjoy Antarctica. I think what I enjoyed about Antarctica most was even not the actual running part. It was to getting to know people, the other race competitors, because there was 33 race competitors, including myself, in Antarctica, and there's no Wi-Fi there. So you actually have to talk to people, compared to the current world where everybody's just glued to their phone. So we ended up playing games such as Jenga. So a blind person playing the game of Jenga is quite fun. And just chatting to others there as to why they came on the World Marathon Challenge and why they wanted to do it. And everybody had their own particular reason. There was another girl there. She was suffering with brain cancer for the last 10 years. That's why she went and did it. There was another person there. They were trying to raise funds for a charity. Then you had professional runners like Mike Wardian and Ryan Hall. So there was just a lot of different mix of runners on it. So that was good. So that's the part I enjoyed most.
Yeah, of course.
In that marathon, getting the opportunity, because I didn't have as much an opportunity at the other races because we weren't there. Because once it started in Antarctica, then it was literally being brought to the continent. Yeah. And then, whereas in Antarctica, before it started, we had about 2 or 3 days to kind of acclimatise. So, and the marathon I liked least was the 5th day in Marrakesh, because the course didn't fully suit me because of my disability. It was just that the section, there was an 800 meter section, and that section where we had to run didn't allow myself and my guide runner run side by side.
Okay.
So we had to run single just for that section anyway, of 800 meter stretch. So we had to run in kind of single file. So he was running in front of me and he had his hands behind his back and I was running behind him. And it was just all these beautiful palm trees all planted and everything, and that's all great, but it doesn't really help if you're trying to run a marathon. But I don't think they were going to cut down all these trees just so that I could run a marathon. So I think that would be probably a slightly unreasonable request. Yeah. So
just maybe just a little one, you know.
So the palm trees were left intact, so we decided that we had to go with this whole thing of running single file. And I suppose when people are running, like I was losing race position and I was losing distance and time because I had to go slower on that section. So mentally that's quite difficult, because it reminds me of my disability. That section did remind me of my disability because of needing to go slower and other runners passing me out. So that's a marathon I liked least.
Oh, just listening to you talk, I'm smiling away here, Sinead. I really am, because like I will go on a treadmill later on now, and I will go for a jog, and it's going to change my mindset completely doing it just after talking to you and hearing about your experiences doing that. You've absolutely no idea. But what I do know is that someone doesn't just get up one morning and go, I'm going to run 12 hours on a treadmill today and then do it. You know, you obviously started somewhere. So when did you start running? And was there a reason behind, you know, taking up running as a hobby, which turned into a profession, really?
Yeah. So I was never involved in sport as a child. I was always left sitting on the PE bench in school. No teams ever picked me. I was always last to be picked, if I was ever picked. And in my teens or in my 20s, I never did any running or any sport, really. And then at age 30, I was asked to do a 10K for Child Vision, National Education Centre for Blind and Visually Impaired Children. And then I just automatically said yes, because charity work has been a very big part of my life ever since I've been growing up. My parents have always instilled in me that it's important to give back to society. And even just going back slightly with the World Marathon Challenge, on the World Marathon Challenge, there was 3 sportsmanship awards, a $15,000, a $10,000 and a $5,000. And it was based on running ability, personality, how helpful you are to other athletes. So it was a very much rounded type of sportsmanship award, and each of the athletes had to nominate a person to give the award to. So the athletes nominated me to get the second award, which was the $10,000. So wow. I ended up giving that to the Irish Guide Dogs. Oh. So that, again, as I say, charity has been a very big part of my life and giving back. So that kind of is why I automatically said yes to doing this 10K in 2012 when I was 30. So I said yes automatically, not having a clue what a 10K was. But
that's what I was going to ask. Yeah, so you hadn't done it before. And
I didn't even do 5K. So and when I started, I found it quite difficult to find a running guide, which was, again, like, I automatically thought, okay, I've said yes to helping a charity, so other people will be like me and they'll automatically say yes to helping me. So I very quickly realized that it wasn't going to work like that. Mm-hmm. The guide runners weren't going to volunteer their time and just come forward. So I was a bit disappointed about that. Mm-hmm. But it took a bit of perseverance. Like, again, this comes back to how resilient you are. With that situation, I could have just said, okay, I can't find a guide runner, I won't bother doing this. Whereas I continued to search. I put an ad in the newspaper. I went on local radio. Mm-hmm. I went into sports shops. And it was actually, I was in a sports shop one day and I got talking to a woman. And that's how I ended up finding a running guide. And when I went on I did 8 weeks training for this 10K. And on my, was a first or second training run, I was only 2 miles in. And I was all delighted with myself. And I said, I can do this, no problem. And she said to me, Sinead, why are you saying that? I said, but sure, we're just after doing the 10K now, aren't we? And she said, no, we're only like at 3.2K.
Oh, no.
I very quickly realized that this 10K thing was a much bigger thing than what I actually thought it was going to be. So I did my 8 weeks training. I set myself 2 goals because I think it's having a sense of purpose is always important.
Absolutely,
in
yes.
Focusing you. So my 2 goals was to raise €2,000 for Child Vision and to complete this 10K under an hour. And now, obviously, it wasn't going to be life or death if I didn't complete it under the hour. Uh-huh. But for me, I just like to try and have some bit of a specific type of a goal. And I did it in 55 minutes and I raised over the 2000, and it built my confidence. And then
that was
following on from that, then I tried to find a new guide runner, and I couldn't find a guide runner. And then I was in a running club, and they only want me to run a particular pace because they were afraid of me falling. And then they didn't want me running out on the road. So I just kind of felt like a caged animal. And that was kind of like completely contrary to my academic life and my personal life and everything, because like if you feel trapped like that, you don't feel like that you're progressing. So I left that running club, and then I was out of running again. And then in June 2014, I did my first half marathon. I said to myself, okay, I don't know why everybody's making out that these half marathons are hard or a full marathon is hard, because sure, a full marathon is only 2 of a half marathon. So that can't be that bad. So then in the July 2014, I decided to do my first marathon, which was going to be Dublin in 2014. Mm-hmm. And again, I looked for a running guide. No running guide came forward. Again, wow. I was quite disappointed.
Yeah.
And so I put out a tweet on Twitter, and this guy came forward and he said, I'll be your running guide. But he was based in Dublin and I was based in Cork. So I badly wanted to do this marathon for the October 2014. And at the time, I was doing voluntary work with Childline, answering the phones. And so that was my charity of choice that I was supporting. So I said to myself, well, how badly do I want this goal? So the guy said he'd train with me and run. And so I travelled up on the train from Cork to Dublin for 3 hours to do a 2-hour run, to then travel back down on the train again, 3 hours. So basically, I was on a train for 6 hours just to do a 2-hour run. Oh. So anybody who complains about going out for a half an hour run today needs to think about my story of being on a train for 6 hours.
Yes.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. That's what I was talking about earlier on about me later on, you know, when I get to minute number 6 on the treadmill and my mind is getting bored, I'm like, hang on a minute. I just spoke to Sinead Kane today. I'm going to keep on going here.
Yeah. Well, even at that point, then, like, I don't know, do you listen to music on the treadmill? But if you did listen to music, then at the point where you're starting to get a bit of fed up or bored, say to yourself, okay, I'm going to stay on this treadmill now until the next song plays, and I'm not going to get off it until the end of the next song. Mm-hmm. And then maybe depending if your workout hasn't finished by then you just go on to the next song, and then you just keep doing it until that. Or I don't know, you just say to yourself, okay, well, what's 30 minutes of my life? And this time in an hour's time, yeah, I'll be finished anyway. So again, it's all about this talking to your mind and all of that. So I did. I ended up training with that guy, going up and down on the train. And then I did my first marathon in October 2014. And I had set myself the goal of wanting to do it under 4 hours. And the running guide I was running with at the time, basically I just wanted to up the pace, but he didn't want to up the pace or whatever. And I just said, okay, well, I need to get under my 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm heading off. So I let go of the tether and I ran forward. This is where you really do have to manage your emotions. I have to get better at managing my emotions. Mm-hmm. So I let go of tenor, ran forward, and then kind of said to myself, oh crap, that was a bit of a stupid decision. What am I going to do now? I can't see where I'm going. There's herds of people coming behind me. What do I do? So my eyesight is that I go by colour. So I saw a guy in a blue t-shirt and our white t-shirt, and I went over to him and I asked him for help, and that white t-shirt guy just disappeared. So obviously he did not want to do it. And then I saw a guy in a blue t-shirt and I asked him for help, and he guided me to the finish line. And we were getting close to the finish line, and I told him that I wanted to do it under 4 hours. And he said, okay, well, quick, it's 3:59 on the clock. You're going to do it. But then I started getting quite upset, and he thought I was getting upset because of achieving my goal. But I was getting upset because with visually impaired people at the beginning of a marathon, they let them off 2 minutes beforehand to stop crowd crushing or anything like that.
Gotcha.
But then those 2 minutes get added on at the end. So my time, and even though set on the clock 3:59, my time ended up actually being 4:01. And for me, like, life was over. I was never running again.
Yeah.
I did not want to speak to anybody, and all of this. And then actually at that marathon, John O'Regan, he was in that marathon that year. He was a pacer. I think he was doing either 3 hours or 3:10 or so. And I had only known him for about 2 weeks at that stage. And he came up to me and he said, "How did your marathon go?" And then I said to him, "Oh, I don't even feel like I've run a marathon." So, like, I was quite annoyed because there was all these people walking around and they just looked like bent over in pain, and I just didn't feel like that at all. And then I think maybe John might have thought, okay, well, is she only saying this? But then he was analysing my movement, and he could see that I wasn't in any pain with my legs or anything. So then he said to me, "I think your talent lies in ultra running." And then I said, "Well, what is ultra running?" And he said, "It's any distance beyond marathon." And he suggested then I run a 50K the following February. And I said, "Well, that's great, but who's going to run it with me?" And then he said he would. In the February 2015, I did a 50K with him. In the July 2015, coming up to that July 2015, he told me that he felt that I could break the 12-hour track record. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" I the furthest distance I have ran is 50K, and the longest I've ever ran is 4 hours, 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about me running 12 hours. And he was saying, no, I believe you can do it. And he also said that he believed I could break the track record, and he just was very instilling a lot of confidence in me. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went up there with the intention of, sure, if I get bored, I'll stop after a while, because any distance is going to be a PB for me, because, like, I've never done this before. Whereas John was very excited because he felt that I could beat the track record. And when I went up there, a lot of people was kind of looking at me to say, okay, who's this girl?
Yeah.
Who's this blind girl? Because I was the only athlete with a disability.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so went into it anyway. And I think there was a small bit of an attitude from people, sure, God love us, look at the poor blind girl running around.
Yeah, because that must, like, be difficult to,
yeah,
to
that
deal
is
with.
Difficult.
Yeah,
that
because, is, because you when know what you're capable of. And especially John, you know, that must have been so nice to have someone finally see, you know, what you were capable of and believe in you. And then all of a sudden you've got people who are kind of going, oh, you know, doing the opposite to what you've worked so hard on. You know, that had to have been hard to deal with.
Yeah. Well, he has believed in me from the very start. And even with these records that I've gained from the World Marathon Challenge and the treadmill record, I would not have gained those records if it wasn't for my guide runners, in particular John helping me and motivating me and being my run coach and telling me have realistic goals and all of that. So when we went up there to this race, he just said to me, focus on your strength, focus on your training, and just let that do the talking. And that's what I did. And I ended up coming second female in that race, and I did end up beating the track record. So I think it was that race that really signified to the other ultra runners, okay, well, this girl is, like,
yeah, she means business. Not, yeah.
She's not just a blind runner, and all of that. I ended up going to the volcano race in the Atacama Desert in November 2015. That's organized by Richard Donovan. He's also the organizer of the World Marathon Challenge. And with the volcano marathon race in the Atacama Desert, like, that really mentally and physically took so much out of me. It was such a difficult race. Mm-hmm. And in that race, I actually came last in that race. I was the only athlete with a disability. And I suppose mindset wise and mentally wise, it's not great to know that you came last.
Yeah, of course.
And when you're putting in so much effort and you just feel like that the end is never in sight. And again, I remember we were coming, we were coming towards the end, and I said, John, how much further is it? Like, you need to start telling me, like, in, like, are we talking meters or what? And I remember at one point John said, oh yeah, I think we're near the finish line now, because we're after getting up to the top of the volcano or whatever. And then he actually said, actually no, we're not near the finish line, we've still a good bit to go.
Oh no.
So yeah, so there was a lot of tension then.
Yeah, I'd say you were like, ah, no, John, you're better than that, come on now.
With that race, even though I came last, then if I had been in the race, it's all about perspective, if I had been in the race the year previous, then I would have come fourth female, so, given my time, and when you analyse my time. Compared. So I think as well that you have to put things into perspective, and then you have to also ask yourself and make yourself accountable. You have to say, okay, well, am I competing with others, or am I competing with myself? Mm-hmm. And am I wanting to just better myself? And as well as that, with the volcano marathon, as we were going along, John was trying to describe the beauty of the landscape to me. Not like, because when we're going along, like, it's very much communication, mm-hmm. Not conversation, because obviously he has to be telling me up, down, left, right, uh-huh. ramp, rock type of thing. But like in that scenario, he felt that the landscape was so beautiful that he was taking one or two pictures on his phone, and then to later that evening, so that I could try and get some sense of what the beauty was, that I would zoom in on my phone. Mm-hmm. So they were just two different ways that we were using. So he was describing beauty to me, but he also wanted to try and capture it, yeah. some bit, because I do have a small bit of vision. So by zooming in and then by looking at it on my magnifying glass later that day. So that was Volcano Marathon. And then following on from that, then I said to myself, at the end of that race, I said, right, I'm never running again. And then within half an hour or an hour, I was saying to John, what do you think could be harder than the Volcano Marathon? And then he said, well, Sinead, that was quite tough, but there is a World Marathon Challenge. So on our way home, we discussed that. And then in the January 2016, we made the decision to go on the World Marathon Challenge. And not a lot of people know this, but for the year in advance to me going on it, I trained and I prepared, and I tried to get sponsorship and partnership from companies. And in the April of that year, two companies came on board. They were going to give me sponsorship. In the June then of 2016, they dropped me because of Brexit. And that summer, again, like, this is where mindset comes in, and about being resilient. I was training on the track that summer, every Sunday morning, doing 4-hour runs in the lashing rain with John, and sometimes trying to do it by myself, just following the white lines around. And some of those Sunday mornings, I say to John, or just even say in my own head, like, why am I doing this? Like, I've no sponsorship, so I've no confirmation that I'm going on this goal, but yet I'm out here in the lashing rain, nobody around, and I'm doing all this, and I don't even know if I'm going. And that's where you really have to be focused on the reason why you're doing something. And because I knew that by doing the World Marathon Challenge, if I succeeded at it, that it would be a springboard for me to talk about not only my running journey, but issues that I'm passionate about mm-hmm. disability issues. So that kind of gave me the motivation on those Sunday mornings when nobody's around to praise you, because I believe that I don't do things for praise or for rewards, but I think it's what you do in private, such as running around by yourself mm-hmm. for numerous hours and putting in that hard work and dedication and commitment, that's what reaps your success in public. Because I think we live in such a world now where everybody wants instant gratification.
It's so true, isn't it? Yeah. It's like they just want to throw up a picture on Instagram and get 100 likes in 10 minutes. And if they don't, then they feel bad. You know, that's literally the world we're in at the moment.
Yeah, because like running makes you feel running teaches you discipline, and it teaches you patience, and it teaches you hard work. Like if you want to run a 3-hour marathon, and at the moment you're 4 hours, like going out tomorrow, you're not going to run the 3-hour marathon tomorrow. You might not run it next month or in 6 months. This is why you have to have a plan, and this is why you have to put in the training and be consistent with the training, and the results will come in time. But that's where people have this difficulty, because we all expect instant results. So my disability has also taught me about patience as well, because I can get frustrated through my disability. And so, because sometimes it takes me maybe longer to do something than a normal person, but I do end up getting the job done in the end.
Sinead, I could literally speak to you for hours. And to hear you say, you know, that like you're not doing it for praise and stuff, like you're clearly passionate about actively promoting disability resilience. Listening to your story has been an absolute joy. And I know I said it earlier on, but I will never take the treadmill for granted ever again. Like it to me, like you said, something as simple as that, you know, it's really a privilege more than anything. And I shouldn't be looking at it as, oh, I have to go on the treadmill, or, oh, I have to go to training. You know, it should be a case of where, like, you know, I'm lucky that I get to do this. And I hope a lot of people listening to us right now kind of end up in the same mindset after listening to your story. I cannot, you know, explain how like inspiring you are to talk to, and between the world records and your training, and then even, you know, taking up, you know, running, you know, at a later time in your life and stuff, and look how much you've done. You know, it really, it just shows as well that it's never too late, you know, to start something, really, isn't it? So
I just want to say that, like, I was never involved in sport as a child, but I got to where the Irish singlet at the World Championships 24-hour running in France in 2019. So if I can do it, then anybody can do it.
Sinead, it is absolutely amazing. Is there anything that you can give our listeners, you know, to take away from this podcast before we let you go? Any advice, you know, that you'd like to give them?
Well, one tip would be to try and find an interest that makes you interested in it. So, like, have a sense of purpose. A second tip would be your own best friend. Another tip would be celebrate small wins. I suppose try and believe in yourself. Challenge yourself, get out of your comfort zone, because for me it's true, challenging yourself and getting out of your comfort zone, that makes you resilient. Have the commitment to your goals, focusing on what you can control, not what you can't control. Consistency, and have courage, because I think through suffering we develop courage. And sometimes I find it difficult to be courageous, but I know there's a positive impact can come from that. And to realise that sometimes you may think, oh, that a situation is never going to end, such as maybe COVID. There is a finish line, whereas with my disability, there's no finish line. But even though there's no finish line to my disability, I'm grateful in some ways for my disability, because it has allowed me travel the world, and it has allowed me gain records, and it has allowed me the gifts of patience. So choose to be visionary, not blind.
I'm sure you're so used to people telling you at this stage how much of an inspiration you are. And for people who've been listening to this podcast who would love to, you know, keep up to date with what you're doing and learn more about you, where can we find you online, Sinead?
You can go to my website, SineadCain.ie, or I'm on Instagram, CainSinead777.
Sinead, I cannot express how much of a pleasure it was to talk to you on the WellFest podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much. Bye. Take care.
You've been listening to the WellFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. Remember to check out wellfest.ie for more free health and wellness resources. See you next time.